Welcome into the KSRO Kitchen. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, celebrating our 32nd year, bringing you the best in food and beverage news, both near and far. And we want to just start on a sad note and then move into a happier note with our special guest chef author, and that is the passing of Chef Evelyn Cheatham that we learned about yesterday afternoon. You had emailed me, John, after hearing from several people, and Steve Jackson and Mike DeWald did a beautiful, passionate tribute to her along with Clark Wolf yesterday afternoon on The Drive, which was very heartfelt. For those of you that don't know, Evelyn was a real icon in the culinary world here in Santa Rosa. We first met her in the late 80s, early 90s. She came to Santa Rosa in 1987 and started working at the bakery up in Healdsburg the same year that we went on the air in 87 and then opened a little restaurant called Tweets, Tweets Cafe and Bakery. And I lived in the Santa Rosa Junior College neighborhood during that time, and my wife and I could walk over to the bakery. We were there from the day they opened. And of course, being the wise guy, I said, "Oh, Tweets. So do you love birds? Do you have pet birds?" And she said, "No, actually, my nickname as a child was Tweet." And that's why she named the bakery Tweets. And we enjoyed her scones and biscuits and all her beautiful breakfast items. But our favorites was going to dinner at her place. Yeah. She made a pastilla that was sensational. It was a specialty with ground chicken and Moroccan spices and the toasted ground almonds and then enrobed in phyllo dough and then with the powdered sugar on top. And
can it was you a beautiful imagine dish. How much time that took to make?
It took a lot of time. So Tweets was up and running in the early 90s for a couple of years. She closed that, then moved back to New York, came back out to Santa Rosa and started working for the juvenile probation department, helping young folks re-enter society and teaching them life skills and culinary skills in the late 90s, and then started teaching at Santa Rosa Junior College. She had a number of classes there, and then had this great idea to form this other school for offenders or young kids that
our
were
kids
displaced from their family or at risk and had substance issues or mental health issues. And it was called Worth Our Weight.
Because
that's what she felt these kids were worth. And she had several different locations, started in Windsor. Remember that? She moved She moved to 3rd Street, number 3rd Street, and then found a location right down the block from the radio station on Hammond Drive in Montgomery Village. And a lot of people came together, not only all of Evelyn's available funds, but donated to make this wonderful school a reality in 2007. And she had many fundraising dinners and all kinds of great events. She offered brunch on Saturday and Sunday. And these were for kids 16 to 24 years old that she taught life skills and culinary skills.
Well, and the other thing that she did was, especially at this time of year around the holidays, Thanksgiving, would just prepare meals for whoever wanted them. There was no qualifying to see who was going to get a turkey dinner or something like that. She just made it. And people loved to contribute and loved to volunteer for that. In fact, she had to cut it off often with people saying, "No, we don't need any more turkeys. We don't need any more volunteers." She was quite
a soul. This was part of her life's mission for over 20 years to provide Christmas dinner for everyone. Yeah. She'd deliver us and volunteers would deliver these Christmas meals. So she ended that last year, last Christmas. She closed the school last year. And one of the last great events that she did was with you in 2017, a real experience.
It was fun. And again, it was a way of teaching the folks who were there, who I hesitate to call them students, because they worked really hard, and because it was open, especially on weekends, as a restaurant, they worked and manned the restaurant and did all of that. But it was all to teach them culinary skills so that they could go out and get a job.
Were you the kids, and you worked on an assembly line, a pizza line at the Press Democrats event
that
down
was
in Front Park, and the kids manned the grills and really developed communication skills, talking with the hundreds.
They were, you know, it was so fun
that came
because
through the line.
We did this thing in which people grilled their own pizza. You know, they could do, and the kids just took over, and so you and I could, we just wandered around, drank wine, and did stuff
and
like
the
that.
Kids, well, we can't overstate Evelyn's importance to the community, that the community's welfare was her number one priority.
Do you know, the thing that I'm so pleased about is that during her life, she was honored in many ways by many different organizations. So sometimes when people who give so much pass, we regret that we didn't pay more attention to them when they were here.
Well, I think the tributes will continue this coming week, both on our radio station and the newspaper, too. So, Evelyn Cheatham, we miss you. When we come back, we will meet one of the best cookbook writers, and I don't know about her chefing skills, but I assume they're extraordinary.
Well, and travel writers, too.
And
holy
travel
cow.
Writers, too. And that's Fuchsia Dunlop. That's when we return. This is the KSRO Good Food Hour.
Petaluma hears FM News Talk KSRO on Crystal Clear FM at 94.5.
Dr. Tom's work is truly world-class.
Introducing another grateful client of Dr. Walter Tom's Aesthetic Laser and Vein Center in Santa Rosa.
I'm a flight attendant, and believe me, when it comes to plastic surgery, I have seen it all. Luckily, my friend told me about Dr. Tom's website. I took a look soon after I met him. I was immediately taken by his warm and authentic demeanor. I love that he only uses local anesthesia. That made all the difference to me. I decided on two procedures, breast augmentation and Botox. Now, whenever my girlfriends see me in a bathing suit, the first thing they ask me, after they tell me how amazing I look, is where did you go? I want that. My answer? Dr. Walter Tom in Santa Rosa. He and his staff are the best the world over, and I've been all over the world.
For your free consultation with Dr. Tom, please call 542-8346. That's 542-8346.
Look younger by Monday.
Call 542-8346 or visit Dr. Tom's Aesthetic Laser and Vein Center on Stony Point Road in Santa Rosa or online at laserandvein.com.
Enjoy the last of the summer vegetables and fruits at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. The market is popping with the colors of fresh greens, mushrooms, carrots, potatoes, turnips, Brussels sprouts, and winter squash, along with seasonal pomegranates, persimmons, apples, walnuts, almonds, and even fresh chestnuts. Meet local ranchers offering a variety of quality meats, beef, pork, and lamb. Salmon Creek Ranch is taking orders for your Thanksgiving or Christmas goose. There's fresh fish and crab from Anna's Seafood. Everything you need to create the freshest Thanksgiving feast is at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Check out the creations of the many talented artisans for holiday gift giving. Open year-round Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 till 1 p.m. at Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Here's a message from the Marin-Sonoma Mosquito and Vector Control District.
So much water, so little time. A mosquito can go from egg to an adult in less than a week. Dump out containers and other items holding standing water. Clean out clogged rain gutters, empty potted plant saucers. Anything that can hold water for more than 5 to 7 days has the ability to produce mosquitoes.
Report mosquito problems to the Marin-Sonoma Mosquito and Vector Control District at msmosquito.com.
Are the results of your advertising arriving too slow? Now imagine your ad on virtually every smartphone carried by a consumer as they enter your competitor's store. That's what we do at Waterdrop Digital. We handle the details, you get the results. WaterdropDigital.com.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
In the KSRO kitchen, I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash as we welcome into the studio live this Saturday morning Fuchsia Dunlop. Her new book is The Food of Sichuan, a new and updated edition of the classic Land of Plenty. Thank you for coming to Santa Rosa, California. Is this your first visit?
It is, yes.
It is your first visit to Santa Rosa. You've been in the San Francisco area for the past, what, 5-6 days or so?
Yes, exactly.
On your book tour?
Exactly,
and
yes.
And we're at Book Passage and doing dinners in Chinatown and areas. And this afternoon, you're at the wonderful, wonderful bookstore, Omnivore Books, in San Francisco at 3 p.m. It's a free event. And are you going to be reading passages from the book? What are you going to do?
I will be talking about Sichuanese food.
Mm-hmm. Which you know a thing or two about.
I hope so.
So give us your history. How did you hook up with Sichuan?
Well, I was a very keen cook, even as a child, and I grew up with a very international diet because my mother taught English as a foreign language, so we had foreign students around all the time. But China, I got into through a sub-editing job at the BBC in my early 20s, went there on holiday, liked it, kept going, started learning Mandarin, and then I managed to get a scholarship to study in China, and I chose Sichuan partly because I'd had an amazing lunch there the year before, and I knew it was this famous center of gastronomy. And then when I arrived in Chengdu, the Sichuanese capital, in 1994, I was immediately surrounded by the best Chinese food I'd ever had, and all these markets overflowing with fresh produce, little snack vendors cooking up wonderful crisp pastries and noodles to order. And so, you know, as a teenager, I'd already started recording recipes in my notebooks and keeping a diary, which ended up being mostly about food. And so in Sichuan, I just started doing the same thing, and then asking the owners of little restaurants if I could go in their kitchens and poke around and learn. Mm. And then heard about this famous cooking school, the Sichuan Higher Institute of Cuisine, and a German classmate and I went along and persuaded them to give us a few private classes. And then when I'd finished at the university, they invited me to enroll as a regular student. So I was the first foreigner to study there.
Mm. Not just the first woman, but the first foreigner.
Oh, there were a couple of other women, but I was in a class with 50 young Sichuanese men and two women, and the first foreigner. And it was all taught in Sichuan dialect, and our textbooks were all in Chinese. And although I'd been studying Chinese for a year or two by then, there's a very specific vocabulary for cooking. Mm-hmm. These ingredients and special cooking methods that normal Chinese people wouldn't necessarily know these mm-hmm. characters.
How long was that?
That was 3 months full-time. Mm-hmm.
And then after that, did you get a job in a restaurant?
No, I mean, I'm not a restaurant chef, but I've kept, so for the last 25 years, really, I've kept going back to Sichuan, spending time in kitchens, not just professional kitchens, also home kitchens and, you know, with street vendors and so on, researching the food and collecting recipes.
Well, so in the book, I mentioned that it's also a travelogue, and that you have all kinds of recommendations for restaurants to try that you got ideas from and all of that. And it... I think that we were saying before the show, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, Sichuan was, except for some places like San Francisco, it was really totally unknown. I mean, it was an out there kind of thing. And it's amazing that in that short period of time, it's become the hot topic.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that in Britain, as in here in the United States, Chinese food for most Westerners mm-hmm. meant Cantonese mm-hmm. food, and a style of Cantonese food that was adapted to local tastes. And this, of course, was because of historic patterns of immigration. But since the 1990s, Sichuan has been the hottest cuisine in China, sort of.
Literally.
Huh? Literally, yes. And very, very popular. And so since the 90s, you've got a whole wave of new Chinese immigrants and sojourners coming to study, to live and work in the States. And they don't want to eat American Chinese food. They want to eat the food they like at home, mm-hmm. which is Sichuanese mm-hmm. food. So I think there's this real... Chinese food, particularly in, you know, very cosmopolitan centers, is not just food for Westerners adapted. It's just Chinese food on Chinese terms, and that's why you've got this flowering of regional cuisines.
It's one of the things you talk about in the history of Sichuan is how because they were kind of on the trade routes and all of that stuff, so they had people visiting them. But one of the things I was astounded at is how big Sichuan is. It's bigger than Italy, is that right? Or
yeah.
as big as Italy or something?
Yeah, I mean, Sichuan, China is so huge. Mm-hmm. It's like a continent more than a country, yeah. really. And a Chinese province, think of it like a European country. And also in terms of culinary diversity, I mean, the difference, if you go and have dinner in North China, in Xi'an, and then you fly or take a train to Chengdu, the Sichuan capital, it's like going to another country gastronomically, because the flavors, the whole means of expression in culinary mm. terms is totally different.
And are there different regional cuisines within the Sichuan region?
Yes, and that's one thing I wanted to reflect in this updated edition of the book. So in this huge area, there are many different terroirs and mm. regional styles. In particular, there's a difference between Chongqing, which is officially not part of Sichuan province, but a separate municipality now, but is part of Sichuanese cuisine. So Chongqing is infamous even in Sichuan for very mala, numbing and hot dishes, and for this hearty jianghu cai, river and lake dishes, which is really casual roadside stalls with generous, enormous proportions of food buried in piles of chilies. And then Chengdu, the capital where I lived, where the food is a bit more delicate and refined and has this undercurrent of sweetness. But also I travelled for this book, when researching this book, to the south of Sichuan. This is a fascinating region. So you get, for example, the use of some ingredients like litsia oil, which has a strong lemony fragrance. Mm. They use a lot of pickled chilies and ginger, very characteristic of the region. And they make wonderful fresh tofu and serve it with all these dips, which are often zested up with spearmint and Korean mint and other fresh herbs. So it's very distinctive. And so I've included recipes from a number of different places.
So there are a couple of ingredients, though, that really define Sichuan cooking.
Yes.
And what are they?
Well, I suppose, I mean, you could say the chili is a famous ingredient, but the chili is also used in other parts of China. But most specific to Sichuan is hua jiao, flower pepper, or Sichuan pepper. So it's unrelated to pepper botanically. Mm. It's actually in the citrus family, and it's these little berries which are dried and they split open, so you get these little peppercorns. And if you put them in your mouth and chew them, you get this amazing tingling, numbing sensation. And the word for it in Chinese is ma, which means anesthesia, pins and needles. It's other meanings. And Sichuan pepper has this extraordinary citrusy aroma, absolutely gorgeous, and this numbing taste. And it's often used with chilies to make mala, numbing and hot dishes. So that's one of them. And that's actually the ancient Chinese pepper. It's native to China and has been used for thousands of years. And regular pepper, white or black pepper, is known in Chinese as hujiao, barbarian pepper, because it came from abroad.
Interesting. So, there was a time in which we couldn't, Sichuan pepper couldn't be sold in America. What was that all about?
It's because of the connection with the citrus family. And some people thought, I understand this was sometimes disputed, but there was a theoretical risk that it could carry citrus canker, which would be a threat to your American citrus crops.
Yes.
But now it is permitted, and I think that it's heat treated, or there are different regulations.
Well, it's funny you should say numbing as an attribute, because you mentioned the sweet, the sour, the bitter, the umami, all the other flavor components, and that numbing is one of the characteristics described to the food. That's an attribute.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose it's just that, you know, apart from the basic tastes, you know, sweet, sour, salty, bitter, umami.
It's a component.
You also get, I mean, chili, that's also a physical sensation and not just a taste. So Sichuan pepper is a bit like that, really. It's beyond the boundaries of taste.
So I want to congratulate you, though, because I think for such a long time in America, we had the senses of taste. We had four.
Yes.
And then umami came along, and everybody has embraced that. But as you said, forever in that part of the world, they've understood that there really is the sixth one, which is the pepper, the heat, the however you want to describe that.
Yeah.
And that they're constantly, and that the food of this area is constantly kind of playing with that in a playful way.
Yes, I mean, that's the thing, that the stereotype about Sichuanese cuisine is always, both in China and abroad, that it's really fiery, spicy. Mm-hmm. And that's actually, certainly heat is one of the characteristics, but the most salient characteristic of Sichuanese cuisine is this bold mixing of flavors and the dazzling diversity of tastes. So people in China say Shi zai Zhongguo, Wei zai Sichuan, which means that China is the place for food, but Sichuan is the place for flavor. And they also say Yi cai yi ge, bai cai bai wei, which means that each dish has its own style, and 100 dishes have 100 different flavors. So a good Sichuanese meal is not all spicy. There are always mild dishes, there may be sweet and sour dishes, many different flavors. When I was a trainee chef at the cooking school, we learned 23 official canonical flavors, like the French canon of sauces. Mm-hmm. And those were sort of combination. Some of them were hot, like mala. Some of them were had a bit of heat, like yuxiangwei, fish fragrant flavor. Lovely combination of pickled chili, ginger, garlic, scallion.
I was going to ask you what fish fragrant meant, because you refer to that a number of times. It's a description of a sauce.
Yes, and it doesn't have any fish in it.
That's the important thing.
And also, it's rarely used actually for cooking fish. It's usually cooked, you know, pork slivers, eggplants, chicken, lots of different ingredients, but not actually used for fish. And people say that the name came because it uses the seasonings of traditional Sichuanese fish cookery, so that when people ate this combination, they would think, oh, it tastes like fish. And there is another point of view, which is that in the past, when people were pickling chilies, the kind of chilies they use for fish fragrant dishes, they would pop a couple of Crucian carp, this little freshwater fish, into the pickle jar to bring out the umami tastes. But a lot of food experts I know in Sichuan say, actually, this is not the reason for the fish fragrant flavor. It is that it's the seasonings of fish cooking.
So is that in a on a restaurant menu, would you see that term used?
Yes.
That fish flavoring sauce or
literally,
whatever.
Literally, yuxiang, fish fragrant. Yeah. And it's often translated weirdly into English as sea spice or I can't remember. There's a few other because it's a curious term. I like to translate it literally because I think it's rather curious and interesting.
Yeah,
and it's also really delicious. And
that's a flavor.
Over and over you made that point.
Yeah. And also an important component is the Sichuan chili paste, besides the peppers.
Yes. So that's another. So it's from the county town of Pixian near the capital Chengdu, the famous Pixian Doubar or Doubanjiang. And what it is a paste made by pickling a local variety of chili called Arjingtiao, which is a few inches long and has a curved tail in absolutely bright scarlet when it's harvested. So that's chopped up and pickled with salt, lacto-fermented, and then mixed with molded fava beans. And
like moldy.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And so the fava beans are mixed with a bit of wheat flour and then allowed to grow a mold, and then they are salted and fermented and they're mixed together, and they are traditionally left in these huge clay vats for 2 to 3 years. And traditionally they were open to the elements, so they would sunbake and then they would absorb the dew, and every day somebody, and they still, some of the factories still make it like this, guys go round with these long wooden instruments and turn the paste by hand. And as it matures, it goes from being quite a scarlet colour to going a really wonderful mahogany brown and almost purplish when it's really mature.
And really hot.
No, not really hot. No, it has...
What's not really hot for you?
It has what they... I mean, it's the base of what they call another flavour combination, jiachangwei, which is home-style flavour. Mm-hmm. And so typically when you use this paste, you sizzle it in oil... And the oil shouldn't be too hot, so you just coax out this wonderful red colour. The oil goes red and becomes very aromatic. And then you add liquid and other ingredients. And it brings to dishes a wonderful, savoury, almost meaty, umami taste with a bit of heat.
It's interesting when you mention that technique, because it's similar to what curry chefs do. You know, both in India and in Southeast Asia, you know, that they will take that mixture of all kinds of stuff and cook it slowly until the oil comes to the top.
Yes.
And then add that to liquids of all kinds.
But it's funny because in China, you know, often with lots of the aromatic ingredients, for example, garlic and ginger, they're normally chopped fine or sliced before sizzling in oil. They're not made into a paste. But with pickled chilies and with the Pixian Douban, this chili bean paste, they are used as a paste.
So can we get this here?
You can, yeah.
Where?
Well, most Chinese supermarkets now. So there is a sort of, you can get the Hong Kong, there's a Hong Kong Lee Kum Kee International brand. Mm-hmm. They do a version. Now, it's not really the traditional type. It has a few other ingredients, like a bit of garlic and, you know, soybean as well as the traditional ingredients. So purists would say don't use that, but you can get quite good results. That's the easiest available. But now, with the popularity of Sichuanese food, the many Chinese supermarkets serve the real deal. And actually, in my books, I always put the Chinese characters for all the seasonings, and people sometimes take photographs of the characters on their phone. And if you show them to a you know, Chinese shop owner, they should be able to help you find it. But yeah, if you can get the real stuff, it gives the most wonderful mapo tofu, which is one of the greatest of all Sichuan dishes.
You eat a lot of it, and you talk about the mapo tofu yeah. and how important it is. And we need to take a quick break. If you would like a word with Fuchsia Dunlop, you can call us at 636-1350. You can email steve@ksro.com. If you know her, want to say hello, or you want to send us something from your travels. You do lead culinary travels, don't you?
Yes, I lead culinary tours of China with a company based in Beijing called Wild China. And it's small groups, 12 of us, eating nonstop for like a week or two, and it's really fun.
So maybe some of you have been on a tour with Fuchsia and you want to say hello. So please.
So let's go, you and I.
I'm ready to go. 636-1350 or steve@ksro if you'd like a word with Fuchsia Dunlop. Her new book is The Food of Sichuan, a new and updated edition of the classic Land of Plenty, which was published in 2001. And you had every accolade possible for a cookbook, the greatest book for non-Western chefs on Chinese cooking and the history of publishing, and one of the great cookbooks of all time. And it didn't seem to go to your head. You're just as passionate about learning as you were 25 years ago.
Well, also, the more I learn about Chinese food, the more aware I am of how much there is to learn, and the more in awe I am of my teachers in China, really.
We'll be back after this.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
This is George Adair with Cross Country Mortgage. If you're in the market to buy a home, this message is for you. My team and I are experts at providing hands-on assistance to getting your home financing done fast and with confidence. Folks, I've been helping people obtain the right financing for nearly two decades. This experience has helped hundreds of homeowners get through some challenging situations. Maybe you're a property investor, or how about a first-time home buyer? Divorces are very complicated, and you need my experience to understand what your mortgage options are. Inherited property or rent-to-own agreements are also my specialty. Financing a home is a huge transaction in your life. When combined with a challenging situation, you need the advice and confidence to do it right. If you're ready for a great lending experience, call 707-583-8100. That's 707-583-8100. Or visit georgiadair.com. That's georgiadair.com.
Cross Country Mortgage, NMLS ID 2039, and George Adair, NMLS ID 245370. Equal housing lender, subject to credit approval.
Our world is constantly changing, but the joys of winter are eternal. This fall, celebrate the official kickoff to winter with Warren Miller's 70th anniversary film, Timeless, presented by Volkswagen. Explore British Columbia, Colorado, France, Austria, Switzerland, and more, alongside legendary ski icons like Glenn Flake. It's not just a movie, it's an experience 70 years in the making. Find a show near you at warrenmiller.com.
Paradise Pet Resorts welcomes your furry family members to go to paradise for the day. Try doggy daycare. It helps your dog socialize, learn dog etiquette, and get exercise. There's all-day supervised pup play, indoor and outdoor yards, and webcams so you can check on them from anywhere. Nobody loves your pets like you do, but nobody cares for your pets like they do at Paradise Pet Resorts.
It's paradise.
We went on the street to find out what you love about MySonomaDeals.com.
I always take advantage of the hotel deals.
Oh, the restaurants for sure.
Believe it or not, you can save 50% and more at MySonomaDeals.com.
I take advantage of the golf deal.
Visit MySonomaDeals.com often for the best deals in Sonoma County. They're always changing and in limited quantities.
We love the family options.
You'll find savings and fun all wrapped into one at MySonomaDeals.com.
I had no idea.
With Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast, here's Daniel Trucios on the KSRO Weather Watch.
Sunny skies through the weekend into Monday, but still cool temperatures. High of 79 today, 69 along the coast. Clear skies tonight, low 41, 43 on the shores. 79 again for Sunday, 65 in Bodega Bay. Monday it's 77. Tuesday, though, a few clouds come in at 76. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
Oh,
We know that many of you are, of course, listening on the radio, and many of you are listening online around the world and country to our show this morning. It's the Good Food Hour at KSRO with Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner. And special guest today live in the studio is the author of The Food of Sichuan, a new and updated edition of the classic Land of Plenty, Fuchsia Dunlop. And we do have a caller online who's calling from Los Angeles who sent us a photo of himself and Fuchsia on a, looks like a culinary trip went to. So let's welcome Jeff from Los Angeles. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Good to be here.
Very good. You are on with Fuchsia this morning. Go ahead.
Hi, Fuchsia.
Hello. How are you? Again. That's so funny to see your photo on a terrace in Shanghai.
Yep.
In what trip was this that you were with Fuchsia?
So I'm a science teacher at a private school in Los Angeles called Harvard-Westlake School, and we had an opportunity this summer to actually take a trip to sort of broaden our horizons about Chinese culture, but specifically about Chinese cuisine. And we were just absolutely privileged to have it in part led by Fuchsia herself, who chose some of the restaurants we went to, as well as ordered pretty much all the food, and as the dishes came out, was able to give us a background about the flavors, the reason why it's coming out in a certain order, the local delicacies, and the history of the processes of making all the food. And it was an absolutely mind-opening experience, even for somebody who was a fan of Sichuan food myself before even going on the trip.
Did you take a cooking class?
We did at one point. We made some dumplings as well as a mapo tofu dish.
Of course.
and that was one of my favorite dishes that I made, not the one I made, but one of the places that we went was sort of a kind of a restaurant that was just in the backyard of somebody's house, and that the mapo tofu dish that they had made there with the Sichuan peppercorns was just breathtaking, and it became one of the first things that I actually tried to cook for myself in my own kitchen once I got home, with the Sichuan peppercorns, of course, that Fuchsia herself were able to provide for the entire group in China.
That's wild. So one of the other things you talk about in the book, and I'm curious if you had a chance to sample that food too, are street foods, little carts, little, I mean, I guess that's famous in that area.
And Jeff, before we let you go, anything else to add? But it sounded like a great adventure that you were
actually
on.
I was asking Jeff.
Oh, you were asking Jeff.
Yeah.
And was Jeff able to?
He's give him a chance.
Go ahead, Jeff.
we didn't do as much street food as I actually thought that we probably would, but that was because we were actually stuffed full of breakfast, lunch, and dinner and snacks pretty much all the time. But we did have go to some street markets and try a lot of the local produce and a lot of the local spices and some dumplings and other kind of, like, I guess they would be local delicacies, but more like little shops rather than, like, carts on the side of the road kind of thing. But, yeah, it was a surprising experience for a lot of the reasons that you guys have already been talking about, that in the United States, Sichuan food is, I think, kind of seen as greasy, incredibly spicy, and it's not really at all like that if you have the higher quality things. It's very local ingredient, incredibly diverse. It's spicy but not overly spicy, and it's an incredible balance of all the vegetables and different proteins and different flavors and sauces from hot to cold. And that's why, for a large part, it was a very kind of mind-opening experience for me.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah.
It was fun traveling with you, too.
Thank you so much for joining us, Jeff. That was very illuminating.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much.
All right,
take care. Good hearing from you. And the photo gave Fuchsia a reference about who you are and the trip that you were on.
Yeah, you look very happy there.
We're very well fed, certainly.
Yeah. So would you talk a little bit about the temple cooking, Buddhist cooking? Because that's an important part of this, which by its nature is vegetarian. And this is a part of China that they love meat, don't they? Especially pork.
Well, I mean, people love meat, yes, but in the past, most people couldn't afford to eat much of it. Yeah. So actually, one of the great highlights of Chinese cooking in general is all the delicious vegetables. And there are so many dishes where meat is either absent or just used for, as a flavoring. So actually, Chinese diet is a real model of sort of healthy and sustainable eating. But specifically, the Buddhist vegetarian temple cooking is really interesting, and particularly in the light of the fashion nowadays for fake meats and so on in the West, but China has a history going back many centuries of Buddhist temple cooking. Now, monks themselves in Buddhist monasteries live on a very simple diet of tofu and grains and vegetables, but monasteries had to entertain visiting pilgrims and patrons to decent food and banquets. And so there evolved this tradition of making what looks like a normal Chinese feast with the meat and the fish and the poultry, but everything is made from vegetarian and pretty much vegan ingredients. And you find this in temples all over China, but the Sichuanese have their own version. So if you go to a Sichuanese Buddhist monastery with a restaurant, you can eat, for example, twice cooked pork, and the pork is made from sliced sweet potato, which is fried in a particular way to make it seem like pork. Or you can have shark's fin soup with shark's fin made from mung bean threads, or brilliantly pork ribs in black bean sauce, and the ribs, yeah, or wheat gluten impaled on bits of some stiff vegetable like lotus root. So it's really fun, and it's so convincing because it looks, feels, and even sometimes tastes like meat.
So we think it's a big deal that we're doing these meatless meats here. They've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, they got there first.
I thought it was interesting you mentioned that some of the spices are prohibited because they will inflame the passions, the carnal side.
Yeah, so strict Buddhists, including monks, they don't use garlic in their cooking, or scallions, or any of the allium family. Luckily for Sichuanese monks, they do use chilies, however. So you do find those in monastery cooking.
Well, the other thing, the many other things that you talk about are their love of texture, especially, and kind of things that are totally weird to us, like jellyfish and...
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that's really fascinating about Chinese cuisine is that, I mean, China has a great gastronomic culture, and the Chinese have a heightened appreciation of mouthfeel and texture. And they enjoy a much greater range of different textures than most Westerners do. So, Westerners like the crisp crunch of sort of fried chicken and so on. The Chinese also like the wet crunch of cartilage. And quite a lot of, in Sichuan, when you have Sichuan hot pot, there's a lot of rubbery offal going on, like goose intestines, which have no flavor, but this lovely, springy, slithery texture, and tripe, and many other ingredients like that. And I think for Westerners, certainly when I first lived in Sichuan, I found these things baffling. I mean, I thought it was just like eating rubber bands. Like, what's the point in eating these tasteless, high grapple factor, chewy things? And over a few years, I found that I was actually enjoying them and ordering them myself. And now I really enjoy this extra dimension of texture. And I always encourage people who come on my tours and people who want to learn about Chinese food to try and initially open their minds and palates to the possibility that the feeling that things produce in your mouth can be part of the pleasure. Because if you don't, of course, there are plenty of Chinese dishes that anyone can enjoy from anywhere. But there's always going to be a sort of subset of dishes that are inaccessible because they'd only make sense in textural terms. So if you want to be able to fully enjoy Chinese food, everything that's offered to you, you need to sort of open up this door into the world of texture.
So I have to ask, and we'll repeat it again. So if somebody wants to go on a tour with you, how do they get in touch with you?
Oh, Google Wild China, all one word, and my name, and it'll take you to the Wild China website. And I do two tours. One of them is called the Classic Tour. So it takes in Beijing, so you also get to see the Forbidden City and the Great Wall and so on. Xi'an, where the Terracotta Army is. Sichuan Chengdu, where you see pandas. And then we finish up in Shanghai and Hangzhou. So it's there are local guides who will ensure that you see all the wonderful sites, and I'm in charge of the food. And what I try to do is to choose restaurants and order food that reflects many different facets of each regional cuisine. So from street food to high-end cooking, hot pot, these different things. And then I order food, again, which helps to tell the story of the region and shows you what's special about this place, its ingredients, its cooking method, its culinary history.
We'll take a break at that point. Fuchsia Dunlop in the KSRO kitchen live this morning with Chef John Esch and me, Steve Garner. A new book, The Food of Sichuan, a new and updated edition of the classic Land of Plenty. She'll be appearing at Omnivore Cooks this afternoon at 3 p.m. That's at Cesar Chavez Boulevard in San Francisco. It's free. You'll get a chance to meet her and, of course, get a copy of this wonderful book. Did you retest, before we take a break, all the recipes from the book from 2001?
I retested all the recipes and I added 70 new ones.
Wow. Back after this. This is KSRO.
Traffic on the fives. Weather six times an hour. Sonoma County's morning news with Pat Kerrigan on FM News Talk, KSRO.
There's a better way to garden and landscape in Sonoma County, and it starts at a Better Way Produce and Nursery on Stony Point Road, just north of Todd in Santa Rosa.
Hi, Daniel R. Gibbs, botanical artist. I'm the award-winning resident licensed landscape designer and contractor. Our team once again has won first place at the Sonoma County Fair's Hall of Flowers. That makes it 15 years in a row. We invite you to the nursery. Shop the multiple greenhouses, shade houses, and outdoor displays. And visit our Landscape Design Center to plan your garden retreat. In May, my team and I participated in the garden show at the Alameda County Fair. I'm proud to say that we won 5 out of the 8 awards, including Best of Show and Director's Choice for our landscape design.
A Better Way Produce and Nursery, 3615 Stony Point Road, just north of Todd. Open 7 days a week, 9 to 4:30. There's a better way to garden and landscape in Sonoma County, and it starts at a Better Way Produce and Nursery on Stony Point Road, just north of Todd in Santa Rosa.
Hi, Daniel R. Gibbs, botanical artist. I'm the award-winning resident licensed landscape designer and contractor. Our team once again has won first place at the Sonoma County Fair's Hall of Flowers. That makes it 15 years in a row. We invite you to the nursery. Shop the multiple greenhouses, shade houses, and outdoor displays. And visit our Landscape Design Center to plan your garden retreat. In May, my team and I participated in the garden show at the Alameda County Fair. I'm proud to say that we won 5 out of the 8 awards, including Best of Show and Director's Choice for our landscape design.
A Better Way Produce and Nursery, 3615 Stony Point Road, just north of Todd. Open 7 days a week, 9 to 4:30.
Right now, the Home Depot makes replacing your old carpet easy. With more styles and colors to choose from, there's no better time to buy. With free installation on any carpet purchase of $499 or more, all by licensed local pros, backed for life. Today is the day for doing and saving with free carpet installation only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. For a limited time, $499 minimum purchase required, typically $699. For license information, visit homedepot.com/license numbers. Valid through November 6, 2019.
Enjoy the last of the summer vegetables and fruits at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. The market is popping with the colors of fresh greens, mushrooms, carrots, potatoes, turnips, Brussels sprouts, and winter squash, along with seasonal pomegranates, persimmons, apples, walnuts, almonds, and even fresh chestnuts. Meet local ranchers offering a variety of quality meats, beef, pork, and lamb. Salmon Creek Ranch is taking orders for your Thanksgiving or Christmas goose. There's fresh fish and crab from Anna's Seafood. Everything you need to create the freshest Thanksgiving feast is at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Check out the creations of the many talented artisans for holiday gift giving. Open year-round Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 till 1 p.m. at Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash in the KSRO kitchen today. We are honored to have Fuchsia Dunlop, who wrote the book The Food of Sichuan, brand new, the new and updated edition of the classic Land of Plenty. Joining us live, she's at Omnivore in San Francisco this afternoon at 3 o'clock. So do you travel worldwide with your cleaver?
Yes, I do. Well, whenever I'm going to have to cook, I actually have various cleavers, but I have a small-sized traveling cleaver.
So one of the comments that you make in the book about, I think the in the West, we think of the cleaver as something that only butchers use to whack up big bones and all of that stuff. And you, your comment was that it really is the best knife in the world.
Yes. I mean, one thing is that whenever I do a cooking demonstration, I always ask everyone to come up and hold my cleaver, because you look at the shape and you think it's going to be a heavy butcher's chopper. It's not. It's a light vegetable slicing cleaver, cai dao, vegetable knife. And it's incredibly dexterous. It's often the only knife, really, in a Chinese kitchen. And so you can use it to do, you know, slice up big bits of meat, but you can also slice a garlic clove with this cleaver. And actually, it's very safe, because if you hold it correctly, you have this wall of metal against your knuckles and your thumb and your fingertips tucked away behind. And I find I cut myself much more with the sort of French chef knives than with a cleaver. And the best thing about it that makes it completely addictive is that when you've done your slicing and chopping, you can scoop up all the ingredients on the flat side of the knife and transfer it to the pot. So, yeah, and I was given by my parents for my 21st birthday a whole set of Sabatier chef's knives. Honestly, I don't use them anymore. I just need my
knife. They're on eBay right now.
So you wanted to talk about cooking chicken technique?
I was fascinated by it, because I think, you know, simply cooked poached chicken is, you know, it's always overcooked. It's always dried out. It always tastes like wallboard and all of that. And you have this, such a simple technique. And it's really based on time and temperature, but mostly on time. And it doesn't take as long as one thinks it does. And I think to have a beautiful piece of chicken that you could use in all kinds of ways, in salads and soups and stir fries and all of that stuff, if there's one tip, I would say buy this book for that. So how do you do it?
Well, I mean, the main thing is you don't boil the chicken, and you just control the temperature so that it's barely poaching. That way you keep all the juices and the succulents in the bird. And it's, as you say, it's lovely however you want to cook it. But the Sichuanese have all these fabulous cold chicken dishes with, for example, conjuring up a dressing out of soy sauce and chili oil and sugar, maybe a little vinegar, a bit of ground roasted Sichuan pepper. You can put in a few crunchy fried peanuts as well, a bit of scallion. And you get these tremendously exciting cold chicken appetizers. And that's actually, that I always do this with leftover roast turkey after Christmas. It's become a family tradition in England. But and bang bang chicken, where you have what's called a guaiwei, strange flavor sauce, with many different seasonings all mixed together in perfect harmony. So sesame paste, chili oil, ground roasted Sichuan pepper, and sugar, vinegar, soy sauce, and sesame.
A couple other dishes that you referenced, the dan dan noodles. Are those the most famous dish associated with Sichuan cooking?
I think they're probably the most famous street snack. So a dan dan is a reference to the shoulder pole that street vendors used to carry their gear on. So there would be all these guys wandering around the old lanes with a bamboo shoulder pole, and on either end there would be a basket or a barrel with their little stove and all their cooking pots and ingredients. And they used to go around town shouting dan dan mian, dan dan mian, and then people would ask them to stop, and then they would set up a little stall. And so dan dan noodles, it's always traditionally sold in very little bowls, like just to take the edge off your appetite. And it looks very innocuous, so you just get a tangle of wheat noodles with a little bit of minced pork on top. But when you mix it up together, there's all this chili oil and Sichuan pepper and this particular local pickle called ya cai at the bottom of the bowl. And so they all get coated in this amazingly fragrant and delicious oil.
And kung pao.
Yes.
Chicken is also, I mean, that is typical of this region.
Kung Pao chicken, the American dish comes from the Chinese Gong Bao chicken. And it's named after a late 19th century Chinese bureaucrat called Ding Bao Zhen. And he had an honorary title, which was known as Gong Bao, Palace Protector or Palace Guardian. And he is said to have had a particular predilection for eating this stir-fried chicken with chilies. So it's named after him.
Now we know the backstory.
Yeah.
You were enamored, and you said you could eat this dish every day, as the dry braised green beans.
Yes.
So it seems not a complex dish, but what is it that's so attractive about it?
Well, so Gambian sujido, so Gambian dry frying is a Sichuanese cooking method where traditionally you toss ingredients in a wok without much oil until they're sort of fragrant and lose a bit of their water, and then you add seasonings. Actually, in the modern kitchen, people usually fry the beans first, deep fry them. But it has this very characteristic seasoning, so a bit of minced meat, minced pork, although you can make a vegetarian version, and then the ya cai, a dark crinkly pickled mustard stem from southern Sichuanese city of Yibin, which has a really nice salty umami sour taste.
You said we can also roast the green beans too, oven roast.
Yeah,
the
well,
greens.
That's so you won't get the same color, but if you don't want to deep fry them, some of my friends have suggested, you know, have done it themselves, but you can roast the beans till they're nice and crinkly and then toss them in a wok with all the typical seasonings of the dish.
Could you talk a little bit about the Maipo tofu? We just mentioned it, but why is it so important to you?
And important to you.
Well, it is just one of the most delicious dishes in the world, and it's also evokes the warmth and generosity and spiciness, but not overpowering heat of the best Sichuanese folk cooking. It's named after a late 19th century woman restaurateur called pockmarked Mrs. Chen, Chen Ma Po, who is said to have invented it. And I think it's always the best argument for anyone who thinks tofu is boring and only for vegetarians. So in this dish, you have cubes of tender white tofu, which are braised in a sauce based on that fabulous chili bean paste with a bit of minced beef traditionally, but you can use pork, and even without any meat, it's a fabulous vegetarian dish. Bit of ginger and garlic, bit of dried chili, black beans. So you get all these savory beany tastes and the heat of the chili. And so you braise the tofu till it absorbs all the flavors, thicken the sauce, and then you finally throw in a bit of traditionally green garlic, which is a bit like scallion. And so you get this gorgeous bowl full of tofu in a really luscious sauce, and then you sprinkle over some ground roasted Sichuan pepper. And it's so delicious.
At the end of the book, you talk about the 23 flavors of Sichuan, but you also list the 56 traditional cooking methods of Sichuan. Who knew there were 56 traditional methods?
Yeah,
remarkable.
I mean, you know, China is a very discriminating and serious culinary culture.
We've waited now for the unveiling.
Okay.
Fuchsia has brought a jar, and she's now opening the jar.
So this is really, really good Sichuan pepper from Hanyuan County, the best place in the west of Sichuan. So, and it's actually from the finest terroir, the Ox Market Slopes, Niushipo. So I'd like you to just open that lid and inhale.
And you said it's important to keep it closed.
You'll just get the full fragrance to open it. So
Let me have that.
A sniff first.
Oh, my goodness.
And take one or two out.
Yeah,
Just no more than one or two, and then I'll tell you
how to deal with them.
Yes.
Okay.
So have a sniff first, and then.
Oh, they're wonderful. Yeah. Oh, they're nothing like what I thought.
No.
And they're so much more fragrant than ones I've gotten in the past.
Yes, which, and I can smell them from the other side of the studio.
Yeah.
Just by opening the lid. Now, if you'd like to try it, just take one or two, no more, and chew it juicily in the front of your mouth about twice. And then take it out, because it's delayed reaction. So now take it out, and then wait, and your lips will start to do something interesting.
I think my mouth is blooming.
Yeah, I know.
Is that? No, it's good. No, it's not. It's not like these Thai peppers that I have consumed, where like a cartoon, flames are shooting out of my head.
Yeah.
No,
it's
wonderful.
It's not hot, it's tingly. It's just a very gentle.
So how long does that last?
Several minutes. This is good stuff.
Well, then we have enough time for you to make one person very happy out there in our listening audience. Would you give us your favorite number today between 1 and 12?
8.
That's the lucky number, isn't it? And caller number 8 at 636-1350 will win this autographed copy of the brand new The Food of Sichuan, a new and updated edition of the classic Land of Plenty by our guest today, Fuchsia Dunlop. Caller number 8 at 636-1350. This is a magnificent work. It's some 500 pages. Yeah, I spent 3 days on the book. Mm. It was just wonderful reading it, and I can't wait to go to one of your culinary tours. So once again, the address for your culinary tours?
So Wild China. wildchina.com, and it's a Beijing travel company. And if you search for my name along with Wild China, it'll take you to the page.
I can't tell you how much fun this has been to have you here today. And a safe journey back to San Francisco for your Omnivore 3 o'clock, and then what, back to London?
Yes, reluctantly. And then off to China again.
The other thing I want to say, I said it to you before, the recipes are not difficult. They are the kind of thing, I mean, you may have to search for some of the ingredients and things, but you did such a magnificent job of making it, I don't know, home cook friendly.
Thank you. Yeah. That was my hope.
Great. Well, we hope to see you again.
Yes, thanks so much.
John Ash, we'll see you again in the kitchen.
Yeah.
At the table with Clark Wolf follows the news. This is KSRO Santa Rosa. It's high noon.